And when I first heard that statement, everything rises or falls on leadership, I thought, well, I sort of agree with it. Most things rise, but it really is everything. I've followed churches in my area in Southeast Texas for 41 years now. And in that time, we have seen the end of about 9 or 10 churches. Churches that used to exist and no longer do. And the same thing is true in Indiana. There's a place not far from here called Boxley. Does anybody know where Boxley is? It's not too far from here, I know. But there used to be a church in Boxley. Most people don't even know that. There used to be a Church of Christ there, but it no longer exists. And where I live, there are two congregations that no longer exist in Beaumont. Orange, Texas, at one time had 3 congregations. It was the West Orange, the Milam Street Church, and the Highway 87 Church. And Highway 87 closed their doors, though they had about 60 people. They dwindled down and got down to where they couldn't maintain any longer. The West Orange Church had about 120 people. Today it has about 25. And the Milam Street Church had about 80 people, and it currently is down now to maybe 15 people. So you got 30, 40 people in a community who are still worshiping together, and at one time there were well over 200, 250 people. What happened? With every one of those churches, I can point to the fact that leadership failed to do the job. They did not plan for the future. They had no vision, and things just happened to them. They became the victim of circumstances. And instead of being victims of circumstances, we need to control circumstances as much as possible. But those churches failed because of leadership. Port Arthur, which is near where we are, we actually live in what's called the Golden Triangle. We've got Beaumont, Orange, and Port Arthur, like the three points of a triangle. Port Arthur has had 2 or 3 churches that have closed in that area also. And it's every time it's leadership that failed. Sometimes it was leadership that never planned for the future. Sometimes the church building was in a declining area and it was a high crime area. No one wanted to go into that neighborhood at night, not even in the day maybe. And you know, sometimes a church needs to leave an area in order to move to another place, in order to survive. But that's all; those are all leadership issues. And so leadership is something that today a lot of churches are really concerned about. And churches that are growing, prospering, and have a vision for the future. When I say vision, I don't mean a miraculous vision. I mean have foresight. They're thinking about where they ought to be. Churches like that are concerned about having the right kind of leadership to lead them into the future, to do God's will where they are in their time, their place, and looking forward. And churches, a lot of churches say leadership, but we're okay. We've got 2 elders here and we've got 3 deacons. We're doing fine. Yeah. How are you measuring yourself when you say you're doing fine? You look back at yourself 10 years ago, you had 4 elders, you had 50% more people, you had 5 deacons. And your contribution is no higher today than it was 10 or 12 years ago. What's going on? Oh, we're doing fine. What doing fine means is we still got the doors open and we're still meeting in this place. We've got to do better than that. And I am convinced we may be right now, for churches that are really aggressive and seeking to do God's will, I'm convinced that we may be on the cusp of unprecedented growth in our generation. We may be on right now on the edge of evangelism and success in the gospel in a way that we've not done for the past several decades. And I'll give you some reasons for that as we go along this week. What I want to do this morning is I want to begin with lesson number 1 in the book. And it's a lesson about elders. Even though you don't have elders, it's a critical lesson. And I'm going to spend 20, 25 minutes on this lesson, and then I'm going to open the floor for whatever questions that you may have. And I think that the Q&A period will be the best time that we will spend together. When we think of men who serve in a local church as leaders, we typically use the word elder. In fact, the word elder has been in my generation has been used almost to the exclusion of other terms. There's nothing wrong with the word elder, but there are other terms. You've got terms like overseer, bishop, presbyter. You've got several terms that are used. And, of course, the word shepherd is also a term that is used. We read the verse last night from Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, where the apostle said to the elders of the church at Ephesus, "Shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood." And that word was used to describe not just the worker, but it was used to describe his function. He was to shepherd. Shepherd there is used as a verb. And also in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 2, the word is found there in a similar way. It's the same word that in other places is translated as pastor. And while we don't use the word pastor a whole lot in our fellowship, it maybe is a term that we have let others use, and maybe we need to use it more. But in 1 Peter 5:2, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers. It's interesting that the term elder is used in verse 1 of 1 Peter 5. The word shepherd is used in verse 2. Overseers is used also in verse 2. These are all interchangeable terms that are used to describe the same person. And I'm convinced that we need to re-examine the role that the shepherd, that the elder plays in the local church. And so everywhere I go, I try to urge men to prepare themselves to be elders. And I recognize that not every man can be an elder. There are some men in your fellowship here who will never be able to serve as elders, but they can still grow and still encourage others. Most of the time, though, when the Bible uses the term shepherds, what's it talking about? It's not talking about elders in the church. It's talking about what? Talking about men out in the field who've got a flock of sheep. That's the most common use. King David. David was a shepherd. As a young boy, he was a shepherd. You see numerous examples in the Old Testament of shepherds taking care of their flocks. When Jesus was born, remember in Luke chapter 2, there were the shepherds who were tending their flocks out in the field. But God chose this term to describe the work that the elder does because his work is so much like the man who tends the flock out in the fields. Now, when Paul left Crete, he gave some specific instructions to Titus in Titus chapter 1 and verse 5. As he talked about the work of shepherds, overseers, he said, "For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you." Evidently, things were not as they should be in Crete. And whatever the churches were there on that island, Titus was to do some work with those and was to set in order. But as you read the rest of the text, you realize that he's given the qualifications to serve as elders, and he tells him to appoint elders. And what does this tell you? That when you don't have elders, what? Something is lacking. Now, that doesn't mean you're unscriptural, because a church that does not have qualified elders, if you appoint elders and they're not qualified, now you've got an unscriptural situation. These churches, the fact that they did not have elders at the current time did not mean that they were out of duty or something like that. But as they found men who were qualified and appointed those men, they set in order the things that were lacking. If Paul were to write a letter to us today, in some places he would have to write a letter and say there are things that are out of order. Because in many places, in many congregations, there's an out of order situation that exists in local churches. And let me tell you what I mean by that. I'm talking about three primary roles: the role of the shepherd or the elder, the role of the deacon, and the role of the preacher. And in a lot of churches, evangelists do the work of shepherds. Let me give you an example. In a church not very far from where I preach now, this happened about 20 years ago. It's a church of some size, about 250, 270 people. But the attendance was dropping. Wednesday night was down, Sunday night was down, Sunday morning was down. And after about 2 months of that, 3 months of that, the elders had a meeting on Monday night, and they called the preacher in, and they said, "We want to know what's going on. Why is attendance dropping?" He said, "You tell me. You're the ones who should know that. You're the shepherds here. I'm not." But you see, it's often the case in most churches that the preacher is expected to go out. He's got to find contacts. He's got to set up studies. He's got to convert people, baptize them. They're now members of the church, and then all the follow-up work belongs to the preacher. He's got to ground them. He's got to deal with all their problems. And if they're having issues in their life, it's pretty much the preacher's job to take care of all that. That's the way a lot of congregations have traditionally dealt with their circumstances. And no one would deny that a preacher has a concern for straying souls, but this should be the work of shepherds. And what happens now in that same church where you've got the evangelist doing the work of shepherds, the shepherds are often doing the work of the deacons, the elders. They're the ones who unlock and lock the building. They're the ones who set the thermostats, turn the lights on and off. And their concern is about the meeting place for the sheep rather than for the sheep itself. I don't know if you've seen circumstances like that, but I have in a number of places. And I'll tell you one of the reasons that it happens. A church, you know, meets in a small, maybe in a storefront, and then they rent a little bit bigger hall. Finally, they got enough money to build a building, and they appoint elders, and the elders now are in charge of the building program. And once they get in the building, well, it's the elders who have the keys to the building. It's the elders who know how to set the thermostats. And here, 10, 15 years later, it's still the elders handling all the stuff about the building. Can you see that that's something that's out of order? Not that elders can't do any work about the building. That's not my point. But you see, what about the deacons? The deacons are uncertain about what their work is. About 10 or 11 years ago, I spoke at Florida College, and on the way down there, we stopped in Ocala, Florida. Ocala is north of Tampa a little bit. And Ocala, every year, just before the Florida College lectures, they have what's called Evangelism Weekend. And they invite men who have some skills on certain things to come and speak for them. And that's an all-day thing Saturday and then also on Sunday. And then the next Monday night is when the Florida College lectures begin. But anyway, I was invited to speak. One of our elders spoke, and a trainee that we had at the time, Sean Jeffries, he spoke. All three of us spoke in Evangelism Weekend. But when I spoke on this very thing about the order that ought to exist in churches and how that in so many places everything is out of order. And I talked about the function of deacons in particular, what deacons ought to be doing. And when I finished my lecture, I stepped down from the pulpit. Colin Williamson, the preacher there, stepped up in the pulpit. And the first words out of his mouth is, I didn't ask Max to teach on this. He's kind of given a little apology because the congregation there really was in this out-of-order situation. And he said, I want the elders here to know Max did this on his own, okay? Though he was happy that I preached it because he knew the situation was out of order. But as I walked toward the back of the building, two men got up and followed me to the back, and they were both deacons from other congregations. And they said, Brother Dawson, this is exactly what we need in our congregations. Deacons who are allowed to do the work of deacons. Because you see, the way it works in a lot of churches is that deacons don't get to make any decisions. They don't get to spend any money because it's the elders who have to do everything. And one lady said this. She said, you know, what you're advocating is that deacons can make decisions. And deacons would be able to spend money. We could never trust our deacons to spend any money. Well, lady, I want to know what kind of deacons did you appoint in your congregation if you can't trust them to spend any money? Brother Don Truex and I have worked a lot together on this subject of elders and deacons. And Don and I, about 3 years ago, made a video. In fact, two of us drove from Beaumont, Texas to Tampa, where Don is. We drove 900 miles just to shoot an hour of video in his office. And it's actually an hour and 6 minutes long. But it just talks about the shepherding model and what shepherding is about. But in that video, I mention an illustration that I always use in these lessons, and the illustration is this. One of the deacons says to one of the elders, "We need a new broom. Can I go buy a new broom?" And the elder says, "Let me see that broom. I'll decide if we need a new broom." Okay, so he brings the broom that the church bought in 1991 to the elder, and sure enough, it's worn down to a nub, and yes, we need a new broom. And so the elder says to the deacon, "Okay, go to Kmart, Walmart, and Target, and get prices on a broom, and we'll meet, and we'll decide which one to buy." Does that seem absurd to you? It does to me. But as I was telling that story on this video, Don Truex said, "Brother Max," he said, and of course he's got that very deep voice, he says, "I just have to tell you, I was at a church where that actually happened, where the elders had to make a decision before the deacons could buy a broom." And, you know, I look at that illustration as being absurd and pointing out the absurdity of elders having to make every decision. But what it does, that illustration helps us to see the problem that deacons oftentimes are just standing around waiting, not knowing what to do because they're not given any work. And they have no area that belongs to them. Everything has to come down from the eldership. And Brother Truex, he said that, in his opinion, that this actually comes out of World War II. I don't know how many of you have been in the military. Any of you been in the military? Randy? I've been in the military. I was in the Air Force for 4 years. And in the military, Randy, everything comes from the top down. You don't do anything unless you've got orders to do it. And that Don said, coming out of World War II, we had so many men in the church who served in the Pacific or who served in Europe, and they were always under orders. And so he believes that impacted the churches after World War II into the 1950s and 60s and beyond. And the men who served in the military who were 20, 22 years of age in World War II, by the time they're in the 1970s, they're 50, 52 years of age. And so they're about the time when men are going to become elders and they're used to this kind of top-down authority. And so everything rests in the eldership, and without orders from the elders, you don't do anything. And he says that really has influenced how churches operate. And he says it's not a good model. And what happens when this is the circumstance, everything in the local church is hurt by this. There's so many things that just don't come out right. You know, if you look at your second page on that outline, the most common prayer that is ever prayed for elders, and I know this because I've heard it all across the country, from Florida to California, from Indiana to Texas. The most common prayer is when the collection is taken up, "Lord, help our elders to make good decisions about how to spend this money." Is that all that the elders are? They're just decision makers, financial managers, deciding how to spend the church's money? They've got to be much more than that. I don't think anyone had evil intention, but this is an out-of-order situation. And let me tell you what happens. In fact, I could probably ask Emerson. Emerson, if you are the preacher and you're responsible for all the evangelism in the church, and you shouldn't be, okay? But if you're responsible fundamentally for evangelism, then someone's converted. You're now are responsible for grounding that person. And now if they have troubles, you are responsible again. After a while, you're going to run out of gas and you're going to run out of time. If you are successful, if you convert a number of people, pretty soon you've got all you can handle. In fact, you'll experience burnout and you'll come to a point where you can't handle any more people because you've got so many issues with so many people. New converts, by the way, folks, new converts bring baggage with them, okay? It was that way in the first century. It's that way in the 21st century. New converts have challenges and problems. And listen, old converts, we too have challenges and problems. And if the preacher is responsible for all that, after a while, he's covering so many bases, he's spread so thin that he really can't handle the work well. Now, I recognize that it's not that way in every congregation. There are some great churches today that have really got it together. We mentioned where Roger Schaus is at Charlestown Road. They're really handling things well there. They've got deacons who are functioning well. They've got elders who are truly shepherds, and they've got preachers who are doing the work of evangelism. Actually, preachers who lead in the work of evangelism. It should never be that our preacher does all the work of evangelism. He should lead, but evangelism is everybody's job. But in where churches are out of order, everything sort of breaks down. Every direction, every assignment has to come from the elders. Deacons are not empowered to act without making a they can't make a decision without a meeting of the elders. Everything in the local church has to go through the elders when that's the circumstance. Listen, elders have oversight, but elders don't have to make every decision. Here's a better way, a better circumstance, and that is a call to return to God's order. And so setting things in order, that's what Paul talked about in Titus 1:5. Set in order things that are lacking. Setting in order, evangelists taking the lead in evangelism. And here, when we think in terms of a return to God's order, one of the first passages that comes to my mind is 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2, where Paul told Timothy, the things that you've heard among me, from me among many witnesses, the same commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And what this says is that young men like Emerson, you're how old, Emerson?
29.
I remember when I was 29. That's how old I was when I think I was 29 or when I moved to Kokomo, Indiana. Goodness gracious. I don't know where the years went. That's been 40-some years ago. But here, Emerson Brown ought to have a couple young men like Wade or maybe other young men that he's working with to help train them in evangelism. And maybe, and it doesn't have to just be young men, but the Apostle Paul in 2 Timothy 2:2. If you look carefully in the book of Acts, you'll see 2 Timothy 2:2 played out in real life. Paul, everywhere he went, he almost always had a couple of young guys with him. He had Timothy, he had Titus, he had Epaphroditus, and in Acts chapter 20, I think there's some other men that are listed. But why did Paul have those other men with him? Were they just traveling companions? There were more than that. Paul was training these men to do the work that he was doing. Paul wasn't going to be around forever. And so these men were being instructed by Paul. They were learning from Paul. They were not only learning the gospel, but they were learning how to teach, how to preach. And every preacher ought to have a couple of young men who are following him. But beyond that, Emerson, if you're truly going to be an evangelist, you need to be equipping the members of the congregation, equipping them to do evangelism, not just training some young men, but equipping men and women alike. And by the way, women can do evangelism too. Some of our best evangelists that we have at home never get up in the pulpit and are never before the congregation. But women like Linda Mercier, Yvonne Tarver, these are two great women in our congregation who are constantly involved in evangelism. And they're not only involved in teaching people before they're converted, but they're involved in teaching them after they're converted and doing so much more. So, but if the evangelist should take the lead. And then let deacons be over this business. And I want you to turn in your Bible to Acts chapter 6. And I've got a whole lesson on this later in the book, but for right now, let's just take a minute and look at Acts 6. And this text, and I've heard brethren argue both sides of this. Some argue that Acts chapter 6, that these men are deacons who were chosen to serve the church at Jerusalem. Some will argue the other side just as strongly, these men are not deacons. I don't know that it makes any difference what you call these men. These men who are appointed in Acts chapter 6 are appointed as special servants, and they are put over this business. Now, I'm going to read the first three verses from this text, and you look at verse 3 when I read it and see if yours is worded a little differently. It tells us about the problem in verse 1, and then there's a solution offered. Here's the problem. 6:1 of Acts. Now in those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists, because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution. Then the 12 summoned the multitude of the disciples and said, "It is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business." Did your translation word differently those last few words? How was yours worded, Scott?
Put in charge of this task.
Put in charge of this task. Now, what would that involve, Scott? Let's say you're one of the 7, okay? So we got Philip and Prochorus and Nicanor, and we've got Scott as part of the list there. What would that involve, being in charge of this task? First of all, what is your task?
They need to make sure that the widows are taken care of.
Okay, make sure the widows are being fed. And so what's that going to involve on the part of you and these 6 other men? Okay, you got to organize yourselves to do what?
To strategize how each of you has some sort of part of that.
Okay, you got to have a strategy. How are we going to feed these ladies? And there must have been a lot of them. Remember, the Jerusalem church on day 1 started out with 3,000 people. By Acts chapter 4, verse 4, the number of men, and that's the word male there, the number of men was 5,000. And so you may have had another 5,000 women. And if 10% of those were widows, what would that be? You got maybe 500 widows, and that may be a conservative number. Someone says, "Oh, that's too big, too many people. We can't handle that." Well, it was being handled. It was being mishandled, but it had to be handled properly. Herb.
You got to get together food and all of this and organize.
Yeah.
The distribution
of it. Yeah. You got to figure menus. How are we going to cook the food? Are we going to buy pots and pans and cook it ourselves? Or are members of the church going to cook it? How are we going to do this? How are we going to distribute it? Will we get the widows together for a meal, or will we take the food out to them? Maybe we've got to do both. Now, here's my question, Scott. You're one of these guys, and you got 12 apostles, and you're thinking, should we serve roast beef or should we serve chicken? Let's go ask the apostles. Good idea or bad? The apostles said, "Look, we're giving you this job. You're in charge of it. Don't expect us to set your menu. Should we buy pots and pans down at Omar's place, or should we buy pots and pans down at Abraham's place? You're in charge of it. Go do it." And that, to me, and I believe these men were deacons, but I'm not going to argue with anyone. The point is, men were given a responsibility, and they were over this business. They were in charge of the task. Did anyone have different language in the text than that? In charge of the task, over this business?
Mine said duty.
It said what?
Duty.
Yeah, the idea of duty, yeah. And however you slice it, it's going to come out the same way. You've got, these men are responsible for taking care of this. And brothers, I am sorry. There is a page missing from your book. Oh, I will tell you, that upsets me. Yeah, there's a page. The next page, there should be another page right there, and it's not in the book. Obviously, a deacon was not in charge of this. I am sorry that's the case. But here is the point. There was a problem. The widows were not being cared for. A solution is offered, and the results are twofold. First of all, the problem is solved. What was the effect? How did the group respond to this? If you notice in verse 4, what does it say? In verse 5. The apostles said, "We're going to give ourselves continually to prayer and the ministry of the word." But in verse 5, what was the response to this?
At least the congregation.
Yeah, everybody's happy with this solution. This will work, okay? So a workable solution. And so they appointed these 7 men. But there was a second effect. Not only was the group happy with it, what was the second effect that is found here?
continue to increase?
Evangelism continued. Now, let me ask you a question, Ben. You're an intelligent fellow. I learned that last night, okay? What if this problem was not solved? If the apostles just let it go on and there's this squabbling between the Grecians and the Hebrews, what's going to eventually happen? You're going to decrease instead of increase. More and more people in the church are unhappy. And listen, these folks had a right to be unhappy. Some of the widows were not being cared for. That's what the text said. And what happens to evangelism when you got a bunch of unhappy people? They don't do evangelism. But here, because the problem is solved, the gospel continues to grow. Can you see how wonderful God's plan is? But what did it take? It took the right kind of leadership, and the apostles said, here's a problem. We see the problem. Here's a solution. The whole group is happy with the solution. It works out well, and evangelism continues. Now, there's another lesson, a few lessons later, that addresses this even further. Let me look at something here just real quickly. Guys, I'm sorry you're missing that page. Okay. Deacons' work is incredibly important. And what I've learned is that in churches that are functioning well, they have deacons that are functioning well. If you were to visit the Temple Terrace Church in Tampa, Florida, where Brother Truex preaches, I'm not sure how many deacons they have. The first time I went there to speak on this, or actually the second time, I had all the elders and deacons in a room together, and at that time they had about 9 elders, maybe 9 or 10 elders, and had just about 6 deacons. And they got a congregation of over 400 people at that time. And I'm saying, guys, you elders, you've got to give up some of the stuff that you've got your hands on. You've got to turn it over to the deacons. Let the deacons decide how to buy the broom, and let the deacons decide what color to paint that classroom. Don't be involved in that. And one of the deacons, Brother Collette, spoke up, Glenn Collette, and he said, Brother Dawson, no, this is not going to work. We deacons have too much work already, and we cannot take on more work. Well, I said, Brother Collette, there's a solution to that. One of two things. One, maybe you need more deacons. And everybody's sitting there shaking their heads like this. Or two, what you can do is a job is given to you. You don't have to do the job yourself. If you're supposed to get those 4 classrooms painted, you get yourself 8 people in the congregation. Maybe the women tend to be good painters because they're neater than guys are mostly. You get some people, and you get them together. You get the paint for them. You get them organized, and you get them to do the work. You don't have to paint the rooms. See, sometimes when a deacon's given a job, he thinks, I have to do this all by myself because it's my job. No, you're over that job. You know, what if those 7 men have to cook all the food? Did they have to distribute all the food? How many people were there that they could have got to assist them? So elders can decide what work belongs to the deacons, and whatever work is deemed appropriate for them, let them then do their work. That then leaves the shepherds free to take care of the sheep. The passage that we already saw from Acts chapter 20, to shepherd the church of God, 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 2, shepherd again. The goal, one of the goals of shepherding is to be close to the sheep, to know what's going on in the lives of the sheep, and where the sheep trust you and will turn to you in times of need. When I've been to the Temple Terrace Church about 4 times addressing this, and I'm sorry I keep using that as an illustration, but it's a church that has gone through a transition, a metamorphosis, and they have really come out on this side of it really well. But about 4 years ago, 5 years ago maybe, Don Truex called me and he said, Max, we're having a problem. We're doing this work of shepherding, but we've got all these problems in the church that we never had. And I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, I really wish you could come and talk to us. I said, Don, I'm in Florida right now. I was in Orlando. I said, I can come Wednesday night and I'll meet with your elders after service. How's that sound? And he said, that would be great. And so I met with the elders for an hour and a half on Wednesday night after services. And they said, Brother Dawson, before we started doing the shepherding thing and focusing on the needs of our people, we didn't have all the problems we have now. We've got so many issues. We've got families that have got problems with their kids. And we've got marriage problems in this congregation. We've got financial issues with people in the congregation, people that are struggling and not doing well. And where did all these problems come from? I said, brothers, these problems were there all along. You just didn't know about them because you were not involved in the lives of the people. You were meeting in the back room making decisions about how to paint the classroom. Now you've given that work to your deacons, and now you are involved in the lives of your sheep here in the congregation, and you begin to realize what an awesome task you have, monumental task, to take care of these people. And I've learned that almost every eldership experiences the same thing. We experience the same thing at Dallin Road. We realize how many problems people have. But, you know, if you're just seeing people on Sunday morning and people come in the door and they're smiling, how you doing? Oh, we're fine. But they had a serious argument on the way to church. And they got a problem with one of their kids who didn't want to come, but he came anyway because Dad made him come. You see, if you just see people coming and going out of the church building, you don't know about all that. So the work of shepherding, it is absolutely critical. And you've got to develop a caring relationship with the sheep. And if you don't do that, none of the other things are really going to be very successful. So respecting the roles is really critical to success. Now, I've gone longer on this first lesson than I wanted. I'm going to stop right here. Fire at me whatever questions you've got. Whatever questions or even comments if you want to make, that's fine. Emerson, you're first.
So, talking about deacons, and so I grew up in a Christian home in the church, quote, and I've always kind of viewed deacons as being under shepherds, as in like doing, like the elders are the greater deacons and the deacons are the lesser elders, if you see what I'm saying. Like, they're elders in training, but in the scriptures, their work is totally different.
Yeah.
The elders' work is to shepherd the sheep. The deacon's role is to serve in the you know, functional capacities. And that doesn't mean that there's no overlap, but their work is totally different. It's not like you appoint a deacon so that you can one day become an elder. You appoint a deacon because there's work that needs to be done.
Absolutely. You appoint a deacon because there's work to be done. It's not a stepping stone to the eldership. We have some terrific deacons at Dallin Road Church, some men who will never be elders, never. That's just the way it is. It's easy to identify those men. Those men, we may have a man who cannot teach anything. I mean, he's a nice guy, but he can't teach. He's not going to become an elder, but he's a terrific deacon. And so we can't see that as a step to a promotion. But what deacons and elders do have in common is both are servants. We talked last night, lesson 21 in the book. We talked about the idea of being servants, and we'll have much more to say about that in the course of the day today. But sometimes it is said, well, the work of elders is spiritual, and the work of deacons is physical. And on the surface, that sounds pretty good, because a lot of the work that deacons do is physical. I mean, obviously, feeding these widows in Acts chapter 6, would you not agree that that was a physical task? But does it not have a spiritual element? First of all, you're taking care of God's people. There's something spiritual there. But you're solving a spiritual problem. There's another story, and I'm not going to go into it right now. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, there's a man named Stephanas. And I've already opened the gate, haven't I? Slip over there just for a minute to 1 Corinthians 16. Deacons' work is ultimately spiritual, even though it has a powerful physical element. But physical things relate to the spiritual. If you have to set up the PA system, someone says, well, that's just physical stuff. Yeah, but it has a spiritual element. If the PA system's not set up correctly, if it's not recording, then you see the problem you've got, okay? And so it has a spiritual element. Cleaning the church building. Now, cleaning the church building is strictly physical. There's no spiritual element to that. Would you agree or disagree? You're going to disagree with me, Scott? Why?
It has other ramifications.
It does. It has other ramifications. If people come in here on Monday night and there's books scattered, the gum wrappers on the floor, and stuff like that, people come in here Monday night that you invited from the community, and they say, look at this dirty place. They go into the restroom, and the restroom's filthy. That says something, doesn't it? It says something to the community. It says these people must not care very much about their God, because this is how they maintain the place of worship. And so all this stuff, it all has a spiritual element. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, beginning at verse 13, you know, this is that part of the book where Paul writes and mentions a bunch of names and we don't pay much attention to it, okay? But he says, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong, let all that you do be done with love. I urge you, brethren, you know the household of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have devoted themselves to the ministry of the saints, that you also submit to such and to everyone who works and labors with us. I am glad about the coming of Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus, for what was lacking on your part they supplied. For they refresh my spirit and yours, therefore acknowledge such men. Stephanas, we don't know much about him. He's mentioned, I think, in only one other place in the text. But here, it speaks not only of Stephanas, but it speaks of his what? It mentions co-workers, yes, but it mentions also something else about Stephanas.
Servant.
His household, his family. It mentions the household of Stephanas, and it says they have what? They have done what?
Rise in service.
Yeah. They've my translation says devoted themselves. Does anyone have the old King James Version? They have addicted themselves. Think of that. We think of addiction as a bad thing, but there's a point here where addiction can be good. They were addicted to the ministry of the saints. That word ministry is the same word from which deacon comes, diakonos. And here they have addicted. And was this man a deacon? I don't know. But whatever he was devoted, not only himself, but his family was devoted to serving the people of God. Now, who is it that they're serving here? He's a part of what congregation? He's a part of the church at Corinth. He's mentioned in chapter 1 as part of the church at Corinth. These were selfish, self-serving, self-willed people, but Stephanas is serving people like that. Someone says, not me, I wouldn't do that. Yeah, see, you don't have the heart of a servant yet. This guy had the heart of a servant. He was serving these people. And if you notice there, whatever his task was, he evidently had brought something from Corinth to where Paul was. Verse 18, they refresh my spirit and yours, therefore acknowledge such men. This man, was he a deacon? I don't know, but he had some area of service that he rendered to God and to the people of God and to the Apostle Paul. And Paul said, people like this, they refresh my spirit. This is spiritual work. Whatever it is spiritual work, okay? So just keep in mind that deacons are not limited just to physical things. So all of our work ultimately is spiritual. Another question or comment? Yes, Brother Colvin?
I was thinking, you know, the way I kind of look at this is with deacons and elders is when I think about leadership, you know, and work that I do a lot of work in terms of managing and coaching. Mm-hmm. And typically, a lot of managers, think they're coaching when they're really managing. In other words, they're really all about the activities or the details. What are you doing? How many sales calls have you made? And they think that's building people, which it's not. I mean, you're just dealing with stuff on paper. And so the way I kind of look at the eldership is, to me, it's kind of the people that deal. It's about building people. Mm-hmm. That's really what, to me, in a spiritual way, elders are about. And I do agree that at first glance, you know, we tend to think deacons are the physical things, you know, mow the lawn and whatever. But if you think about it, all of our work is spiritual. Mm-hmm. So it has to be within the framework of, yeah, there are physical. That's the whole point of this thing we just looked at, you know, so that they could focus on the building the people in those aspects. But that's not to in any way undermine. When you think about it, if I'm serving all these widows, am I just plopping out food on a plate and there's no conversation, there's no encouragement? You know, no. This is an opportunity for me not only to finish that task, but to build myself in these competencies that will ultimately maybe lead me to serving as an elder, or you know, if not me, someone else who is observing the elder, and you know, and that's the thing I think sometimes we forget about is we need the example of the elders, not just for the elders to serve the people, but for the younger ones, men, to see the example of what an elder is, so that I'm growing in that. I'm building my competencies. I'm seeing in real picture what it's, I remember my kids, and we used to go to a congregation that never had an eldership. And my wife said, you know, I'm tired of talking to my kids about what it's supposed to be. About, well, you know, it's supposed to be this. We don't have them yet. Someday we'll have them. I want my kids to see what a functioning congregation with an eldership actually is. I want them to experience it so they know, they get it. And I think it's the same thing when you've got one. You have to have those older, and I don't mean older as in ages, but those mature men who are not just serving the congregation, but they're serving as examples. Mm-hmm. To all of us and what we need to be. And if you don't have that, and there are a lot of churches that don't have that, the age that's just above me, because it's missing. And that's one reason we struggle for elderships, because for whatever reason, it seems like we had, you know, good preachers that were this known preacher and that known preacher, but for some reason we forgot all about eldership developing and leading an example so that the younger men saw that and aspired to it and understood this is what we're all working for. You know, whether I start out as a deacon or not, am I making any sense?
Yeah, you know, let me sit down and you teach the class. No, what you're saying is absolutely right. We're in the people business. And you talked about the deacon serving the widow. He doesn't just plop some food down. But he's talking to the widow. How are you doing? Are things going better for you now? And how's your backache? That's just one of the things that we do in relationships with people. And that has to begin with the eldership. Elders are in the people business. You're the shepherd. These are the sheep. You're in the sheep business. Let me tell you a story about one of our men, Alan Davis. Alan Davis is one of our shepherds. He's served now for 10, 12 years, I suppose. But he's a very quiet man, and he's not a fellow that's going to stand up in the pulpit and preach a sermon. But in a one-on-one situation, he sits down, and he's able to see into the heart of another person. And he'll sit down with Ben, and he'll talk with Ben and say, well, Ben, I can see what you're talking about, your problem you're facing. And he has a lot of compassion for people. But we have a secretary. Her name is Helen. Her husband's name is Aubrey, okay? And all of our elders have a list of sheep that we manage, that we particularly see to. You know, we've got 400 names, almost 400 people. And you look at a list of 400 people, you say, wow, that's too tough to manage. I don't know how we're going to tackle that. But if we break it up into list of about 30 to 40 people each, I've got a list that I watch. Alan's got a list of people he watches. We then come together once a month in a sheep meeting, and we discuss how our sheep are doing. But anyway, Aubrey and Helen are on Alan's list. And Helen came into the office one morning, and she said, Aubrey said something strange to me yesterday. Aubrey said, I think Alan really likes me. Why? Well, he just calls me out of the clear blue and just asks me how I'm doing. And I've never had anyone do that before, just call and say, how are you doing? But see, what Alan is doing is checking on the sheep on his list. And what he was doing by calling and checking on Alan and speaking to him at services, well, Aubrey didn't even know he was on that list. all Aubrey saw was Alan talking to him, expressing concern for him. And Aubrey has a lot of health issues. And so what Alan was doing was building a relationship with this older gentleman. And it was having an impact. And listen, if Aubrey goes to the hospital, who's the first person he's going to call? Not the preacher. He's going to call the one who he knows cares about him. And that's Alan. And so we're in the people business. And you use the idea of setting an example, that elders ought to do that. Hebrews 13:7 says to the congregation, remember those who rule over you, who have spoken the word of God to you, whose faith follow, considering the outcome of their conduct. It says that we should follow the faith of these who have the rule over us. That means they serve then as examples to the congregation. There are other passages. 1 Peter chapter 5 says the same thing, that we should be an example to the flock of God. But your comments are just spot on. That's the kind of men that we need to serve as elders. Another comment or question. Yes, Robert?
I'm curious. As you've been around to different congregations working on this, have you ever met actually the serious resistance to this idea of this order, and how have you addressed that resistance?
Yeah. The question is whether or not I've met resistance to this. I have twice, and I've lost count of how many churches I've been to. Most elderships, they desperately want this. And here's the reason why, Robert. We keep bumping up against a plateau. We get up to 170, and we try to go over that, and then we have problems. Or we get up to 250, and we're it's like a glass ceiling. We can't go beyond that. And I think some elderships realize that there's something wrong with their leadership model. And think about it. If all the elders are doing with respect to the congregation is meeting on Monday night twice a month in a classroom and making decisions for the church, if that's the pretty much the sum total of what they do, they're not overseeing the flock. They're not shepherding the people. And there's no real connection with the people, if I can say it that way. And the typical thing is most elderships do meet a couple times a month. And they'll meet in the back room at 6 o'clock and make five decisions. And at 9:30, they finally leave. They walk out. They wipe their brow and they say, wow, it's tough being an elder. You haven't done any shepherding. If all you did was you made a decision, are we going to stripe the parking lot or not? Are we going to use yellow or white? Which color are we going to use? And then how are we going to do it? Have you contacted a contractor to do it? Or are we going to do it ourselves? And they'll argue about that for an hour. Elders will spend an hour deciding on striping the parking lot when there are souls out there that have gone astray and the elders don't even know about it. That's sad. And so elders are hungry for this because they want to get it right. Most of the elderships want to do the very best by the people of God. But they're used to a model, a leadership model that they've seen for decades, and they don't really know anything different. And they don't think, you know, Pat Riley, I mentioned last night, Pat Riley said, we've got to get past the uh-oh factor. What is the uh-oh factor? Okay, Robert, you're a member of our congregation at Dallin Road. And Brother Rogers, one of our elders, comes up to you before services and says, Robert, I need to have a meeting with you right after service. Uh-oh, what have I done? It's like when you're in middle school or junior high, you're getting called to the principal's office. And see, that's how some people look at that. We shouldn't have that. The elders are people of compassion who love the sheep. They're not the principal that's going to give you detention or whatever. But we've got to get past that model. You ask about resistance. I've had resistance only twice. And one eldership said, we're pretty much already doing this. Well, they weren't. But they didn't want to. I spent a Sunday afternoon. I was doing a gospel meeting with a church in another state. And I spent the Sunday afternoon just kind of going over this lesson. We're pretty much already doing that. They weren't. And that's sad. And then another circumstance, we're in charge of the money, the deacons are not. We can't let our deacons make any decisions about money. That would be abdicating our responsibility. Tell me how these men in Acts chapter 6 did their job without making some decisions about how to spend some money. I don't know how they do that. They've got to spend some money. And if they have to go to the apostles for every nickel and dime or every shekel or denarii, whatever it may be, if they have to get a permission from the apostles, it's not going to work. Sometimes people just don't want to change. Listen, if you know something's wrong, you're open to change. But if you don't recognize something is wrong, then you're not open to change. Someone says, there's something wrong with the brakes on your car. You need to have those brakes repaired or you're putting your family at risk. I don't think so. My brakes are fine. Yeah, they make a little noise when I hit. They grind a little, but they're fine. See, you don't recognize something's wrong, you're not open to change, and you need to be open to change. But I've only had a couple times. Most elderships, they want more. In fact, a lot of churches, I mentioned Charlestown Road, I've been back there twice just to talk to the elders. Clovis, California, that's Fresno, suburb of Fresno. I've been out there twice because they said, look, you've got to come back next year and give us more of this. And listen, there's a lot in the book, but there's a lot that I've just seen by experience, and I share experiences with the guys. But elders, there's a real hunger today and elderships across the country to get this right. And listen, you guys don't have elders currently, but maybe you will pretty soon. And whether it's real soon or a little farther out, you want to get it right. You want to appoint deacons who are really going to serve the church as deacons, and elders who will be shepherds to the sheep. And there's a tremendous amount of information in here about how to shepherd, about things you can do. And this is stuff you ought to be doing right now, even though none of you are shepherds currently. It's stuff you ought to be doing anyway, just as a way of connecting with people. Brother, yes.
I really feel like one thing that you've convinced me of is just, and it's everywhere what you're saying, it's up on the screen, it's what we're reading, but, you know, it's so easy for us to talk about an elder and see that as just a position. And I just wish we would just, you know, from now on, just start, instead of talking about, you know, we don't have an eldership yet, you know, we don't have a shepherdship yet, you know.
There you go.
And just start talking about, you know, am I thinking about becoming a shepherd? If I would just use that word instead, I think it would help me understand what I'm really thinking about, what I'm aspiring to. Because when I think about a shepherd, I have a totally different understanding of what I'm supposed to be doing than if I say elder, which I can just see as a position or an age. So I just love the idea of, you know, let's just talk about being a shepherd.
And
a shepherdship.
Brother Clovis, that's what churches across the country are doing. They're speaking now of their shepherds. If you were to get on the phone today and call Don Truex and say, Don, tell me a little bit about the leadership in your congregation. Well, Brother Clovis, we have 15 men who serve as shepherds for this congregation. They're close to the flock of God here. They care about the people. He'll talk to you in shepherding terms like that. And I fully recommend that. A generation ago, nobody was using the word shepherd. Shepherd, it's a word whose time has come. It's been there all along, and it is helping churches by just changing the philosophy. There is a change in philosophy from going from elder to shepherd. That doesn't mean you leave elder off, but we've been using elder 95% of the time or more, and shepherd almost never. And so we can change on that. That's something that's positive, and it will make your congregation feel different about your leaders. And it'll make your leaders recognize, ooh, we've got a great responsibility. We've got to be shepherds, not just decision makers in the back room. Another question or comment. Yes, you're next, Scott.
I was going to say that it's a bit ironic in the fact that a lot of times when we're looking for men who are qualified, we have them aspire to this spiritual perfection, right? And all of our thoughts, for the most part, are, this has got to be a guy who's just an absolute spiritual expert. And then the second he's appointed to an eldership, to your point, he's suddenly in charge of all of these things that it's not that they're not connected to spirituality, but now he has to become an expert at striking the parking lot. Or he's, like you've mentioned a couple of times, on the board of directors of decision-making of either the building or worship service. So either what happens during worship service or the building.
Yeah.
And we're so strict on the front end of that, but then we flip-flop it when it's time for him to actually do the service.
That's an excellent observation, and it is certainly true. We take the qualifications for the eldership, and we put them on a very high shelf. And, in fact, sometimes in some churches, we put it on a shelf so high that no one in the congregation will ever attain to it, because we require perfection. Above reproach, the man must be above reproach. But that doesn't mean he didn't make some mistake 20 years ago. And I've seen churches that have disqualified otherwise qualified men because the guy had a business 20 years ago that failed. He's been a success since then, but, you know, he doesn't have a good record 20 years ago. And that's sad when it's that way. Also, you can take the qualifications, and don't count me as a heretic yet, but I'm going to say that fundamentally there are three qualifications for being an elder. And that's one of the lessons we'll do today. I think it's important enough to do that. There are fundamentally three things that a man must be to be an elder. But if you take the 26 separate things and you go into the history of every word and you look at all the possible meanings, people will throw up their hands and say, we're never going to have elders. And I've seen churches that have done that. I was a part of one of those churches for a while. We make it very, very hard. Listen, the Holy Spirit made it as hard as He wanted it to be made to be an elder. We don't need to make it any harder than God made it. But your observation is good. Spiritual, this guy's got a spiritually perfect. Now, what's his job? He's got to make a decision about what kind of broom we're going to buy. Randy, did you have your hand up, sir? Did I see another? Okay, if we don't have anything, do we need a break here for a minute? Anyone need to go to the restroom? Yeah, let's take 5 minutes. Brian's shaking his head yes, and I'm good for that.